real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Well, do you ever find that the busyness of life gets in the way of making room for love to thrive? That there's so much going on that building relationships or even just being kind to the person who's serving up your coffee seems to come secondary to getting wherever it is that we need to go? Well, what if we could kind of step back and learn to love right where we are in whatever situation we find ourselves in? Well, my guest for today is Maria Goff. You may recognize her last name as the wife of best-selling author Bob Goff, but she is a writer in her own right as well. And she has written a new book called Love Lives Here. And it has reflections on dealing with childhood scars, drawing closer to Jesus, through various stages of life, and how she and Bob have navigated their life through both unlikely adventures and painful loss. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Well, Maria Goff has made a career out of loving her family and her neighbors, of raising her children and turning houses into homes. She's married to Bob Goff, whom she calls the most helpful and interesting man in the world. They've journeyed to Uganda and northern Iraq to start schools for kids who are marginalized. They also have three adult kids who are starting families of their own. They live in San Diego, where she and Bob continue to dream about fun adventures yet to be had with their growing family. Welcome, Maria.
Oh, thank you, Joe. That's such a generous introduction, too.
Well, it's all true. It's all true. It is often funny. Sometimes if I'm writing a little introduction, if I'm going to be speaking somewhere, I say, that's really just the person that I really want to be. I know I'm capable of it, but it doesn't come out that often.
I agree. Oh, my goodness. It's just good to be with you.
Well, thank you. You've written just such a heartwarming book. And, you know, in bold lettering on the back of it, it says, "This is a book about discovering what we really need." So how did you decide, I'm going to write a book on what we really need? How did you come to discover it?
Well, I knew from a very early age that I was looking for something different than what I was experiencing in life, and thought and hoped and prayed that someday I would be able to have a husband and a family and be able to live out our faith in a way that was different than how I was raised. And sure enough, boy, I met the right guy to get me to that dream. So Bob had the same desire, and we ended up living a really interesting life, and we still are. But he ended up writing Love Does a few years back, and because he wrote about our family and the experiences that we did together, it just naturally begged the question, but what does Maria think about these things? And he's more of a extrovert, and I'm the introvert, and you know, it's comfortable for him to share his life out into the world and not as much for me. But I started thinking that I could actually help some people as I was meeting them on the road with Bob, and they would look me in the eye and be like, how did you raise your kids? How did you decide how you would do it? How do you instill a faith and in your kids and cultivate one that where they would love God as they grew up? And I didn't know I knew all of the answers to. I'm still trying to figure out what they are. But I thought if I spent the time writing my own book, then maybe I would help somebody else out, but also that there would be another book on the bookshelf for my kids, kids, kids to be able to pass down from generation to generation. And that really inspired me, especially on those days of writing where I just thought, this is too hard. I'm digging into areas I don't know if I want to dig into, and feelings I hadn't felt in a while. And I just kept writing one foot in front of the other, one word after the other. And I'm really happy for my kids that they have both of our books now, and also for the help it might provide other people who aren't the extrovert in the family but are the introvert like I am.
Well, and you write very emphatically, I didn't write this book because I think we needed more information or more steps or more instructions on how to lead this meaningful life. And yet, Maria, it does seem like you've been able to put these stories together and reflect on what is a meaningful life, and you're just kind of telling us about that. So what do you suggest that someone does as they're reading your book, or what should they be reflecting on to kind of find their own way?
My hope was that the book would act more like a mirror to people's lives, that it wouldn't be, let's focus on mine and all of my things that I did that I wish I didn't do and things that I'm happy about, but that it would be a time of reflection for people, because I think the world has done a really good job distracting us from who we are at our core. I know it tries to sell us things that we don't need at a price we can't afford, and it's costing us our very lives. So the antidote to that for me was taking the time to like give myself a time out and take a deep breath and really reflect on what it was that I wanted to leave as a legacy, not only in my marriage, but with my kids. And what bubbled up to the surface wasn't what the world wants to sell us, which is, you know, the perfect job or the stuff or the home or the perfect relationships with the perfect people. But instead, God in the Bible talks about joy and peace and love and faith and fun and whimsy and creative ideas. And so I started trying to spend my time putting life through that filter. And what would that look like lived out in our family? And so that's what I just started doing early on.
So
it was very different from how I was raised.
You write about how you were raised and kind of honestly reflecting on that. And you tell just such a beautiful and painful story about how you came to know who Jesus was. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that was reflected in your family as well?
Sure. I was the first to be loved by a neighbor. So when I found out later in life in the Bible that God says, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, like that's one of the most important things that we can do, I reflected back on how beautiful it was where I wasn't raised in a family that had a faith, that it was actually neighbors who loved me first. I learned about God out in the street, like playing hide and go seek at night and kick the can and all those crazy games that kids play outside back when I was little. And they'd have to go inside at the end of the night because they had to go to church on Sunday morning and get ready for it. And I remember clearly asking, like, what is church? You know, who is God? Is it like you're in school? Are you graded on what you're learning? And so eventually they invited me to come with them. And that was the first seed that was planted. And then eventually, a few years later, I found myself at a YMCA camp 1 week during the summer when I was about 7 or 8 years old. And it was there that every night around the campfire, the counselors would get together and the speaker would tell stories from the Bible and we would sing worship songs. And there was something so beautiful about what I was hearing. It reminds me that we don't necessarily understand everything that we're feeling when we hear stories from the Bible to experience it deeply. And as a child, I definitely experienced God on that very deep personal level. And I knew I wanted a relationship with him. And so that week was when my relationship with Jesus started.
So you write that when you came home, you kind of wanted to keep that, those feelings, that experience, and you weren't really sure how to do that in your little 7-year-old brain. So one of the things you decided to do was keep your suitcase still packed up and hid it under your bed. But there were some repercussions to that.
Sure. That was a pretty confusing time because it was this childlike faith had just blossomed. And when I started my relationship with Jesus that week, they tied little blue scarves around our necks. And so when I got home, I had that in my suitcase and I didn't want to unpack. And even though I was told to do that and clean up my room, I didn't. I disobeyed and I put everything underneath my bed and I got in big trouble for that. And the pain that I got from my punishment was in stark contrast to what I felt like from my father, was in stark contrast to what I felt from my father in heaven had offered me that week. And so that confusion was, I think it created a rocky start in my relationship with Jesus, but it wasn't until later that I realized that no matter how many hard things that we go through, no matter how confused we can feel in life, once we accept Jesus into our heart, he is always there. And I have returned to that place so many times, and I hope other people feel encouraged to do that too, especially if they're in a place where they're feeling distant and are questioning or doubting whether Jesus loves them and is with them. I can tell you that he has. He just, you can't shake him, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I haven't felt a way to do that.
So I have a feeling that some of the work that you and your husband have done to build schools has a little bit to do with maybe how you felt as a child of being in a place where your family didn't necessarily support knowing Jesus or support your faith. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So some of these schools that we've started in other countries are with children who have been marginalized and have had some pretty tragic events in their life. And so a lot of them, they lose their family, and the hope of being educated is lost. So just the fact that there's a school and an opportunity to learn is presented can change everything in a child's life. And when I look back on mine, it's kind of ironic because I really struggled in school. In fact, for the first few years of elementary school, I was just always behind. And finally, in the fifth grade, one of the teachers called my parents in and said, she's not going to be able to go on to sixth grade because she just hasn't learned enough. And they started throwing terms around like learning disorder and dyslexia. And I had no idea what that meant. And back then, I don't think they really knew what that meant either. But that was hard because when in the fifth grade, kids are pretty sophisticated and they know that everybody moves up a grade. Nobody's supposed to stay in the same. So my parents were kind enough to send me to another school, but what they didn't realize happened there was that I felt like a fraud because I was protecting my true identity from being judged by the new kids, thinking if they knew that I was a repeat customer, then they would make fun of me as well. And, you know, it's sad when that happens because I feel like that put me on this trajectory throughout my life of wanting to guard some of the things in my life that have been very hard. But in these schools that Bob started in some of these countries like Uganda, where families have been completely displaced and separated and some of them have been killed, it's just so sad to know what the realities are that they've gone through, so much worse than mine. But to give them hope in creating a family at the school and surrounding them with people that love and encourage them for who they are and they know exactly what they've gone through and get them through an education. Some have gone on to college now. A few have become lawyers or doctors. It's just beautiful to see what happens when you give hope to a kid in need.
Mm-hmm. Well, the book is called Love Lives Here, Finding What You Need in a World Telling You What You Want. My guest for today is Maria Goff, and we'll be right back with Maria. If you're listening today and you'd like to get her book, you can just go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to submit your name and contact information there. We'll do a drawing at the end of the show. We'll be right back with Maria Goff. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Well, I'm just pleased to be speaking with Maria Goff today. She's written just an intriguing new book called Love Lives Here, and talking about her childhood and how love began. And then, Maria, I think that mostly when I'm reading your book, what I see is that you were so intentional about creating this home for you, your husband, your children, where love was definitely felt. How did you start to say, hey, I'm going to make my home different so that it is that kind of a place?
You know, that I think started from this idea that I had of making a career out of loving my family. I just remember feeling really overwhelmed when the kids were little and not really sure what I needed to make things at home run smoothly. And was at the store with my kids one day, one of those big box stores, and had passed this wall of store signs on display that were for sale. And the one that caught my eye the most was the big black and white one that said "Help Wanted." And I said, I took a look at it and I thought under my breath, I was like, boy, isn't that the truth? I think a lot of us at home will feel like, man, if I just really need some help here. So I bought that sign, I brought it home, and I stuck it in our front living room window. And then it occurred to me, it felt so official, like, oh my gosh, I feel like a store. And if somebody on the street saw that sign, they may come to the door and ask, you know, want to apply for a job. But what that did for me was give me a chance to really think about what it was that I needed help with, so that before Bob got home and would want to know how he could help, that I actually had an answer for it. A lot of times I think we just get so overwhelmed and stuck in that feeling of despair that we're not even sure how to ask for help. And part of asking for help is being able to articulate what you need. And it wasn't much. I didn't need like a new car or a new house or big drastic changes. What I really needed was somebody to just come help with the kids a couple hours a week, and that was it. But putting that help wanted sign in my front window kind of changed my filter for how I was seeing my job and my home. And I thought, I feel like I'm making a career out of raising my family. And it just started with that help wanted sign. And while Bob wants to change the world, I've always been focused on homeland security. That's been my thing. And so I'm pretty clear about that as far as, you know, when we make decisions, I'm always making sure that what we're doing fits for our family and everybody in it, much like how somebody would make decisions for a company running well. You know, you take in consideration, is this going to be good for the company? Is this going to be good for our family? So one of the ways that we were able to express that is through hospitality and inviting people into our homes. And we started with the people that live here and treating them the way that we would want to be treated when we can, you know, come in through the front door. It's like greeting my husband when he came home from work, or, you know, my kids when they come home from school, and how we treat each other. And it was just sort of a, you know, like kind of raising ourselves to a higher standard of respect and love for each other.
Well, and a lot of people know you as this kind of sweet, down-to-earth mom. In fact, Bob writes about you as my sweet Maria. And there is a great story, though, in your book about kind of letting your kids run away from home. Maybe you were helping them to be independent as well. Tell us a little bit about that story and why you allowed that type of adventure.
Sure. They were out in the backyard one day when they were just old enough to be able to play in the backyard. It was all fenced in and safe and everything, but then the back door was open and I could hear them. But after about an hour, they came running in the house with this great idea that they had come up with the three of them. And they had decided and announced to me in unison, we want to run away. And they were just full of joy and excitement. And it kind of took me by surprise because, of course, as an adult, the thought of running away involves like leaving forever and living on the streets. And I knew that they were too little to survive that. But and I was kind of hoping that Bob had been the one at home to be the first one to hear this, because he's such an adventurous person that that's just right up his alley. And I'm more of the one that wants to plan and organize. So in a split second, I had a choice to make, that either I was going to squash their idea and tell them why that was a bad one because they wouldn't survive out in the world, or I could just offer them my enthusiasm and my ability to plan and organize. So I offered to help them pack in the spirit of it all, of their make-believe fun. And we talked about what they might need and eat and what they would need to be warm. And I suggested Band-Aids in case somebody started bleeding. It was very cute. And they all collected their things in a bandana and tied it on a stick and marched out the back door. And to them, this big adventure that they had come up with was just to get on the cinder block wall that lined our property line and march down one side and around the other, and they were back by dinner. But I, you know, I could see them the whole time through the back door and or through the back window. And all I could think of the whole time was how beautiful it was that they had decided to do something together. And my hope and prayer that day was that as they grew older and became adults, that they would still want to do something together, that they would know without a doubt that they had each other's back. And the depth of knowledge and familiarity that they had from being in the adventure together was something that they still carry with them today.
Well, and it's so nice to know that they may still have that bond, because I've noticed that as the kids grow, they aren't necessarily telling me their plans as much as they may be telling each other their plans. And then they don't get my wisdom of how many Band-Aids they should pack and what things they should consider anymore.
This is really true. But when, you know, as they get to know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they understand each other's, you know, soft spots and buttons that they push on each other, it's so beautiful to see how they work that out as they grow older. And I feel like our job as their parents, and particularly as their mothers, is to just nurture that in them and help point out the strengths and weaknesses and soft spots and buttons. And I think a lot of that comes out when we're at home, because if we create an environment where we're really paying attention to each other, none of that gets lost. It's easier to nip things in the bud when we start to see, you know, habits and things that responses to each other that we might not want them to have, like being impatient or selfish, things like that. For me, it all comes out when we're at home, and that's been a really great learning ground, playground for us to learn this stuff on.
It is true that as you are watching your children now, you said they're adults and they've left the home. Do you look back and do you see some of that foundation that was planted back when they were in the home? Or do you look and say, oh, I missed that one thing?
I think there's always things that we know that we've missed. But, you know, I believe that that's where, you know, the grace of God comes in, where he just smooths over all of those rough edges. I think all of our kids will need counseling. I'm pretty sure of it. And I don't mean that just for me. I just mean in a general statement, if we could all just be more accepting that we're not going to get it right 100%, and that at some point, you know, they're going to have to figure out what their gaps are, and hopefully they've left with enough tools in their tool belt to figure out what they need and get the help they need. And that comes from setting an example, too. I'll tell you, Joe, when I was writing this book, things that came up in my life that I knew I wanted to share in the book were not necessarily things that I readily shared with my kids as they were growing up, because they were having a very different childhood. And so, you know, it was one of those things where I just kept praying that God would give me the wisdom to share with them when he thought it would be appropriate to share with them. And it was through the writing of this book. And so some of my childhood experiences and some of the things in my past, I've gotten a lot of help for most of them, but I needed to share with them before it was printed in a book. And that was a really beautiful moment in our family, when I could sit down with each of them and be as real as I needed to be and as vulnerable with them first before I was with everybody else that now has the book and can read it. You know, when they were little, Bob and I chose them in the hopes that when they grew up, they would choose us.
Sweet. Well, I'm talking to Maria Goff today. She's talking about really just being real. I mean, moms are people, too. It's nice to know that we can all have those kinds of conversations and that we can have a few failures, too, and that our kids are still going to make it okay. We will be right back on Connecting Faith. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, talking to Maria Goff today on her book, Love Lives Here, Finding What You Need in a World Telling You What You Want. Maria, you tell just such great stories about family and what you've been intentionally doing, both you and your husband, to create a place where love is alive and well in your home. And in your storytelling, I noticed that while you kind of like your children to be able to step out in spontaneity, that you're a planner. And so you lean a little bit more toward planned spontaneity. Planning can still be loving, can't it?
I think so. It's a good compliment in my marriage with a guy who's super whimsical and spontaneous and really adventuresome and lives a risky life. I feel like that this is why we're together as a couple, is because his strengths and my strengths work together really well. In fact, I like to describe our marriage as two people who are very different, but with similarities that are connected through our faith and our love for our family. He's like the balloon and I'm like the string, and we have very different roles, but equally important ones, because a balloon without a string would be a completely different toy, and strings without balloons would just be kind of this pile of whatever. And I feel like our kids were raised by these extremes that actually they were able to benefit from, in that we can have really wild ideas that are also fortified by some planning. And I think when you step out as a family on adventures, there's a lot of planning involved. At least that was my experience, because there's five of us when the kids were little, and we did some of these adventures, and everybody had different needs and different temperaments and energy levels, and we're not all like Bob, and they aren't all like me. So I think that it requires some thoughtful planning. In the beginning, I wondered if maybe I came across more like the bummer woman, because I was thinking of things like maybe we need Band-Aids. And Bob would be like, let's bring candy. And I would feel self-conscious of that early on, until I really came to that realization that my job is just as important as Bob's, and our kids are directly benefited from that.
Mm. Well, I'm guessing that, like many marriages, you've leaned on each other's strengths when it comes to many different things, whether he's more of a doer and you're more of a planner, or maybe there are some other strengths and weaknesses that come along the way. You've somehow figured that out, haven't you?
I think so. For us, it's been that we've stopped trying to change each other and try to be more like Jesus. That's really been the biggest difference for us. When we first got married, we did pre-engagement counseling and premarital counseling. And I remember hearing early on this beautiful saying, how when you get married, two people will become one. And, you know, in my naivety, I just kind of went to, great, let's just be me then. If we get to be one, I'm picking that we'll just be me. But even though I was really attracted to Bob's differences and his sense of adventure and his ability to just have so many friends and stay in contact with all of them, I really kind of felt more secure in who I was. And then, you know, that, of course, two don't become one of the two of you. You actually become this full unit that God can use to the best of his abilities in creating beautiful things in the world. And so for us, it's just trying to keep our eyes on Jesus. If you become more, you know, of what we look at, then let's just keep looking at Jesus, because that's who the two of us really want to be more like in the end.
Well, and marriage has just such a great way of opening your eyes to things that you didn't even know you were looking for. What's something that you have learned about Jesus from loving your husband?
For me, I can answer that without a doubt, that his unconditional love for me has shaped me the most. When we got married, I don't know if we want to go into this, but I was fresh out of rehab and a warrant out for my arrest. And that sounds really crazy and provocative, but the warrant for my arrest had something to do with traffic tickets. But the fact that I was fresh out of rehab was really a part of my trying to figure out what to do with the pain of my childhood experiences and my self-worth and my identity, and still trying to figure out how do I apply my faith in Jesus. And I carried around so much anxiety inside of me that by the time I went to college, I was relying on over-the-counter medication to deal with my stomach aches, and ended up becoming addicted to those, which then made me very, very ill. So I ended up checking myself into a rehab facility that could treat my problem, and it was eating disorders / drug addiction. They couldn't figure out which side to put me on, so they just signed me up for the program that thought it would help me the best, and it did, and my faith was definitely rekindled, and how I wanted to move forward in my life was very clear. I knew without a doubt I wanted to be a wife and a mom, and was hoping and praying that I would have a chance to do that. And so this is when I met Bob. You know, I felt like I was damaged and, you know, had problems and was just getting my feet back under me. and didn't really see myself as being the best marriage material there was. But when we met, it was in a Young Life club meeting. I don't know if you're familiar with Young Life, but they reach out to high school kids that are unchurched, and they have meetings during the week. And I had called to see if one of the local clubs needed volunteers, because I thought, I'm going to rebuild my life from the ground up. And one of the things I knew I needed was a place to serve others, with you being able to share my faith and also to meet people who have the same values as I did. And sure enough, I walked in to this club, and Bob was already up front, and I thought, well, what a nice guy. He's like singing songs, and he's telling the kids stories, and then everybody's having a great time. And I didn't think anything other than that of him, but apparently when he saw me, he knew he was going to marry me. It was like in an instant, he just totally leaned over and told his friend that that was Mrs. Goff that just walked in. So to me, I look back at that time thinking, I did not feel that I was marriage material or that anybody could love me. I knew that God had a plan for me, but I hadn't really experienced that love to the fullest, that unconditional love. And Bob started showing that to me from the minute we met. So that would be the thing that he's changed the most. And he reminds me every day, like, how long we've been married. I think it's 30 years, 17 days, a few months. He just tells me every day because he keeps track. Yeah.
I have heard him tell that story about when he met you and did say to his friend, that's the one. And it's just such a sweet story. And really, it's interesting how someone can see you for that person that they know you to be, even though you may not see that yourself.
Yeah, but I love that that's why I think God loves us in community. Mm-hmm. Because then we get to reflect that to each other. We get to really come alongside our friends and our family and show them the love that God, you know, through the eyes of God. That's like one of the biggest privileges I think we have in a life of faith, is being able to stand in that space for people that we know and love and be able to show them really who they're becoming, not who we were, but who we're becoming when we can't see that ourselves.
Well, and you write so just welcome. You are so welcoming to people who come to your house, even your family members, whether it's your neighbors. And you talk about that you want your house to be a place where people who are feeling burdened or weary can come, and that they can find your house as a place of rest where they can be loved on. How do you do that? How do you be so intentional about that?
I think for me, it starts with the knowledge of the fact that rest is something that we all have in common. So when I think back on, you know, like, when are the times that I've needed rest, it's really when I've just been trying to grab what I could as I go along, and it doesn't really do it. It doesn't do the trick anymore. It's we get the rest that we need when we actually take that time to stop and breathe in fresh air, close our eyes. I have a favorite chair on my back porch that I'll just intentionally sit in and breathe deep and close my eyes and, you know, pray or think of my family members and just soak in the day or thoughts that I'm having and be real with them. And it sometimes doesn't last very long, but when we do that, I feel that there's this power that rest gives us to share with others, because if we haven't found rest ourselves, we can't give it to other people. So our family has made a point of being able to share that with others because it's important to us. And it started as a place up in Canada that we ended up building to give it was right next to a Young Life camp in Malibu, Malibu, Canada. And it is became the kind of like the employee lounge for the volunteers that worked at the camp, because they didn't have a place to go to. There's no roads that get you in and out. You can only get out by boat or seaplane. So we knew these volunteers were offering, you know, the love of God to all the campers that came in week after week, and they didn't have a place to rest. So we made a place for them to do that. And when they come over, we give them cookies and iced tea and big giant dog beds that they lay out on and get the rest they need so they could go back on the front lines with their jobs and pour into these kids. And that became a really special place for us. And our kids got to serve as well. So, you know, as far as sharing that as a family with other people, I can't think of another way that we've learned to do that than to run a lodge that helps serve others. We went on to expand our invitation to people who were living their faith on the front lines of sharing their faith, whether it's through writing a book or being in concert or running big corporations. And they're on the front line sharing their faith and getting pretty beat up and didn't have a chance to rest themselves. And a lot of times when you're on the front line like that, as you probably know too in your life, that you just need to get away. You don't know who your friends are after a while, and you really feel like people know you for what you do, not who you are. So this place that we built in Canada became that for a lot of people. And this is, I could see it in their face. They'd show up very, you know, hardened and tired and kind of confused about which is north or south, and didn't know really where they were, but completely surrounded by the beauty of the place and the love of God, and to be able to offer them a safe place where they could rest was really beautiful.
Well, and you write that rest is just so essential to even finding that connection deep within your soul with our Heavenly Father. Yes. But you do that in ways that aren't so elaborate as well. I mean, I loved the story about how in your family you serve dinner on paper plates. Why do you do that for your family and yourself?
Well, I think we could try to live up to these standards of, you know, what a perfect dinner might look like. And in reality, raising kids and living busy lives, it's hard to live up to that standard. And I just thought, you know what, let's be practical here. It's not always easy to do dishes, and it's a little bit easier to serve them on paper plates. So let's give ourselves a break and do that. But we turned it into a fun game by drawing on the bottom of one of them a big red star and then shuffling up the deck of paper plates and serving everybody their meal. And after dinner, whoever had the star on the bottom of their plate got to pick what the dessert is. And it's never anything like special or fancy. It could just be some cookies or whatever, but it just became this game. And it made being around, sitting around the table and sharing a meal together a lot more fun. So we started doing that, and hospitality became something that grew out of that, because it was fun to invite other people to dinner and know that it was going to be this a fun place to share a meal without it being distracted by having it to be perfect. Even though we would have meals where we would teach our kids manners and say, we would call it manners night, and we would tell everybody that, you know, they needed to remember, you know, to put their napkins on their lap and to use all of the utensils in all the right order and be all prim and proper. And the kids had a lot of fun dressing up for that, and the boys pulled out the chairs from the table so the girls could sit down, you know, just all in fun and game. But underneath it all, they're actually learning some life lessons that they can carry with them today. If they ever go to a fancy meal, they'll know how to act. And then on the flip side of that is having a no manners night, where you just, you know, you kind of drape the dining room in drop cloths and sheets and serve spaghetti and sloppy joes and just have fun eating without utensils and laughing and making a mess and mostly just creating a memory together. Mm-hmm. And we tried to do that as much as we could.
There is something so special to be said about that, that casualness too, and that tradition. I remember Sunday nights at my house. We had four kids in our family as well, so I'm sure it was chaos from day to day. But on Sundays, we got to have TV dinners and TV trays and plastic forks and silverware and things like that. And then we got to watch Disney.
Yeah.
In the living room with a blanket or a sheet or something that would keep us, of course, from spilling. But I remember that just so fondly and being able to have that time with my family.
Yeah, it's so real. It's so authentic. And yours is a great example of doing what you can with what you have. You know, there's no standard to be met. It's just be yourself, be who you are, and mm-hmm. be your own family without comparing yourself to other people.
Right. Well, I'm talking to Maria Goff today. She's just written a delightful little book called Love Lives Here, Finding What You Need in a World Telling You What You Want. We're going to talk with Maria a bit more when we come back from the break. But if you're listening today and you'd like to get one of her books in your hands, she and her publisher have donated a couple of books that we can give away to our listeners, and we'd love to get one to you. You can look at our website at myfaithradio.com, go to Connecting Faith, and you'll be able to submit your name and contact information that way, and we'll do a drawing at the end of the show. We'll be right back with Maria Goff. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm talking to Maria Goff today. She's written a book called Love Lives Here, and we're just talking about how you can be intentional about making your home a place where love lives. You know, you talk a lot, Maria, about just hospitality and getting to know your neighbors. I was very impressed that you said you know all of the people who live on your street. Tell me more about that and how that happens for someone who you say is an introvert.
Right? I know. And again, I get back to the fact that it's really, you know, the being on the receiving end of neighbors first loving me. And, you know, when we moved into our neighborhood, the some of the women that lived on the block got together and had a tea for me. And I'd never heard of anything like that before. It blew my mind. But I felt included and invited and loved. And, you know, when you're on the receiving end of that, just like when I was a child and was invited to church by a neighbor for the first time, there's something in you. It sticks. And the natural reaction is want to share that with other people. So that's kind of where, you know, it came from. And it's so fun to watch that unfold over time and with my family to be able to dream of ways that we could love our neighbors. And one of the things that we started a couple of decades ago now when our kids were really little, we started a parade on our block on New Year's Day. And in the beginning, it was very little. I think we blew up maybe 50 helium balloons and threw out flyers on the street in everybody's mailbox and invited them to show up on New Year's morning at 10 a.m. down in the cul-de-sac, and then they would end up in our yard for coffee. And, you know, just a few people showed up that year, and this year I think there was a couple of hundred. It's just unbelievable how it's grown because these neighbors are now inviting their friends to come over on New Year's Day and share in the fun. And I was just the other day noticing a pop balloon in the bushes, and it just makes me smile to think that we're all connected. If just for one day on New Year's Day we all did that, we would be safer communities and safer neighborhoods, and we would know each other better. And knowing your neighbors is such a treat, because what we can learn from our neighbors is amazing. Everybody has a different story to tell and backgrounds and things that they've done in their life, and it improves our life when we get to know our neighbors as well.
Mm. You know, I've learned that as well, that when God brings something to mind that I am to do or say or write a note or get over to someone's house, that I can't put that in my calendar. I need to do it right now, because the rational side of me will say, the introvertness will start to take over as I think about it and try to be rational. And sometimes I wish I had a little more Bob Goff in me where I would say, I'm just going to go do it. And so it seems like we have to kind of learn things. In fact, I remember I have a really good friend named Stephanie who just is full of adventure and life. And when those bracelets were out that said WWJD, I would just think in my head, WWSD, what would Stephanie do? I have to do what Stephanie would do, because it would allow this adventure that I wouldn't otherwise allow for myself.
Yes. Good for you. I'm so glad. That's a great little mantra to give yourself too. We all need that extra push just to do it. Don't look back.
So when you were writing your book, if you're an introvert, then I'm assuming there's a little bit of guardedness that goes along with that. Were there ever times where you said,
yes,
I don't know if I can do this?
Oh my gosh. So I mentioned earlier, yes, definitely. And I mentioned earlier that we have this place in Canada that was built next to a Young Life camp. And the whole reason for building it was to serve other people. First, the volunteers at camp, and then other world leaders and people that we knew that were sharing their faith out in the world on the front lines who needed to get away and rest as well. And last year, we had a tragedy up there where some painters had gone up to stain the logs one last time. And they should have known better, but a couple of people on the crew didn't. And they ended up putting the old rags from the day in a plastic bag. And within hours, there was spontaneous combustion, and the entire lodge burned down to the ground. And this was hard to actually comprehend, that something that meant so much to us, that was so much bigger than us, that also felt like a place that was sacred with holy ground, that was now gone. And there was no way as a family that we could, you know, do anything about it other than just to be together that night that we heard it was burning and try to get up there as fast as we could the next morning and stand by the edge of the what was the lodge and now look into this gaping hole that was full of ashes and smoldering bits and pieces of things that we were trying to identify, you know, what it used to be. And this happened right towards the end of writing the book, and most of the manuscript was due at that point. And I had been shaken to my core from this trauma because it was, first of all, it was shocking. Plus, I had been in this period of writing and reflecting some of my most deepest personal things that I had learned about my faith and my family and some of my upbringing, and I was in a vulnerable spot. And I think the combination of all of that just made me realize that I had more things in my life that needed to be uncovered, one in particular, and knew that I needed help to work that through. So Bob and I found a counselor, went back to some people that we know at a place called OnSite in Tennessee, and we met with Bill and Lori Loki, and they were able to talk me through what the trauma was that I was feeling at the time. And it ended up that the memories that I had suppressed of being a very little child and being molested by a relative one time but never telling anybody about it had bubbled up to the surface through this fire. And when I realized that all of this now was part of my reality, the question that I had for myself was, how do I share this? Like, how does this fit into this bigger story of my life, of what I've been spending all of my time writing about in the last 2.5 years that I've been working on this book? And a dear friend of mine just encouraged me to keep writing, just keep writing, keep writing, keep writing. And so I did, and I started to incorporate the things that I was learning about the trauma and the loss of the fire and what I was learning through counseling. And something really beautiful happened where I felt like, you know what, this is like tying a big bow around what my life is already. And I don't need to shy away from that or guard against it. I can go ahead and package it up in a book and send it out in the world because I know that other people are going to learn from this too and be encouraged from it, that in their life, when tragic things happen, that God is always with you, because that was what I figured out in mine.
Hmm. Well, it is just a beautiful set of stories of your own life, and really as you read through it, it does cause the reader to reflect on their own life as well. So thanks for providing that beautiful gift for all of us to think about our own lives, about our faith, about our husbands, our families, and what it really means to love.
I'm so glad that that's what you get out of it. The beauty now that the book is out there, it feels like such a privilege to meet some people that have read it and be able to hug in person and to hear back how their life has been changed. And, you know, fortunately, it's not like we want to be just like you, because that would be missing the whole point completely. It's that they feel encouraged to be who they are. And I think in a world that's trying to distract us from that, it feels really good to be a part of God's bigger picture for people's lives, where our job is to just figure out more of who we are and try to find ways that we can best serve and love the people around us.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much, Maria, just for joining us today, for putting this work out there for us. You can find out more about Maria by going to mariagoff.com or go to our website at myfaithradio.com, and we have more information about her there under Connecting Faith. Thanks so much, Maria, and blessings on your day.
Thank you, Jill. I love being with you.
Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. Have a great weekend.